Steelers Battle League Podcast. My name is James, joined once again by my co-host, Cody. Cody, how are you on this fine Victory Monday?
Victory Monday, and we were there, my guy. We were at the stadium for the game, last minute. A great friend and a season ticket holder of mine, Kelly Woods, hit me up and said, hey, I'm not able to go to the game. He was like, my wife's not able to go to the game. Do you want to go with me? And I didn't even see that before he messaged me again. I don't know if I was working. I don't even remember what the heck was going on. But then he was like, oh, never mind. I'm not going either. If you want the tickets, let me know. And so I was like, oh, I'll reach out to James, see if he wants to go. And James was, yeah, whatever. And then all of a sudden, he messaged me back and was like, do you find anybody? I was like, not really. And he's like, what if they were free? And I was like, I can ask my buddy if he'd want to go if the tickets were free. And James was like, hey, we're going to the game. So it was a good time. It was a great time. Shout out to you, Kelly. Thanks, my guy.
Yeah.
Listen, fun
story. Ally of the podcast.
Ally of the podcast, absolutely. Fun story real quick about Kelly. The first time he messaged me and we were talking or whatever about the game, I was like, thank you, because he always posts pictures of him and his wife and everything, and I was like, thank you so much, and I hope you and your husband have a good time. And then he is like, I thought I was messaging his wife the whole time, but Kelly's his name, and so he busts my balls about that all the time now, and it's just hysterical.
I mean, that's fair. He's probably the first guy I've heard of with the name Kelly.
So. He's not the first guy I heard of. I just assumed, which shouldn't have done that. But he's a great guy. He's from Ohio. He's an Ohio State fan. So calm down, James. Calm down.
Hey, Cam Hayward's from Ohio State. I'm all right with it.
That's fair.
So is Ryan Shazier.
Listen, if he's not at the game, he's out there golfing. So he's a good guy.
Sounds like good people.
He is.
You know who else are good people? Who? People that decide that they want to give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcast. And I'm bringing this up because, folks, there is an opportunity. I know there's some new listeners. I've been watching where the downloads are from. We talked to a lot of people at the stadium. We gave out our business cards and said, hey, why don't you give us a listen? So I know we got some new listeners here. Do us a favor. Spend 30 seconds and give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcast. If you do that, you will get a shout out on the show.
And if you actually write a comment, too. We'll read it. Like some people just give 5-star reviews with no actual explanation or anything, but
which is also acceptable, but we'd rather give you credit.
And we also like the what's the freaking word? Constructive criticism. Or just positive vibes about us, whatever.
You can totally give us a 5-star review and be like, these guys are only okay. I'm all right with that. It's a 5-star review.
Ideally, give us a 5-star review and tell us what you actually think of the show. That's the goal. But yeah, we're just trying to climb those charts. We're again in the running right now for best podcast in Erie. We're on that voting right now.
Just wrapped up, so we'll find out results on that soon, I think.
Yeah, we're just seeing a lot of growth. We posted our biggest TikTok from the game. We got some friends down the line to do this head bob thing with us, so if you get the chance to look at the TikTok, look at that. But a lot of growth, a lot of things happening, and those 5-star reviews really do help a lot. And James will get very excited if he sees those come through. He might text me at 3 o'clock in the morning if he sees one come through.
It happens. And I might either still be up or up already. Yeah. Because those both happen. So.
Yep. But let's not waste too much time here.
Let's get into it. Today we're going to do all the talk about what happened before the game, game in review, and then we're going to save looking ahead at the Kansas City game for a show that we will be recording later in the week. Our goal is to record that on Friday, give you a Christmas Eve edition of the Steelers by the Lake podcast. Looking forward to the game against Kansas City, which is ultra important after this game.
Maybe we'll dress festive for that one.
Oh, okay.
All right. I don't know. I just thought of it.
Yeah.
On the spot.
Hey, I got an ugly Christmas sweater. I'll put it on for it.
But we will figure that out for sure. So let's go into news. First thing, James.
Got to protect those practice squad players that you feel are most valuable. This week, those players were Rashad Coward, Carl Joseph, wide receiver Anthony Miller, and then outside linebacker whose name I still struggle with, Jacob 202 Mariner, I believe.
I believe, he says.
I may have mispronounced some of that. Not sure. We found out Wednesday that J.C. Hasenauer was healthy enough to return from the injured reserve, started his 21-day journey back from the injured reserve. So he resumed his practice, which was fantastic news. The backside of it was that BJ Finney was placed on the injured reserve.
Yep.
So his injury was unfortunately more severe than we realized. Or they just needed a spot for Hasenauer, and they knew Finney wasn't going to play for a couple weeks anyway. Made a swap there. Also that day, we found out Montrevious Adams was placed on the COVID list.
No bueno.
Being placed on it on a Wednesday is bad news because you're not typically going to clear by Sunday, which he did not.
Yes. So, unfortunately, also during the week, I believe this mail haul happened Thursday or during Wednesday's practices. I believe it was Thursday. Yeah, you're
talking Thursday on the injuries.
Yeah. Yep. Buddy Johnson was ruled out with a foot injury, and then Isaiah Bugs was also ruled out with an injury. And then the inactives for the game, obviously those two were out, as well as Dwayne Haskins, Kevin Rader, and Anthony McFarlane. With all that happening, you did also see Rashard Coward elevated for Sunday's game. You got to have those offensive linemen ready because they can go down real quick, and they have been.
Yeah, not to mention, too, the key there is that if you dress 8 offensive linemen for the game, then you can get away with 2 extra active players on the roster for Sunday. So Pittsburgh will do everything they can to make sure they have 8 guys dressing, even if they got to sign an offensive lineman off the street and promote them just to get somebody out there in a jersey.
Heck yeah.
They'll do it to make sure they got 2 extra players. Ironically, in this game, probably the most substantial thing of all that ended up being Kevin Rader being on the inactive list.
Yeah.
He only had 2 healthy tight ends for the game. We'll get to why that's important. If you watch the game, you already know why that's important. So let's get to it, man. You know, kind of a slow start for Pittsburgh once again. The first opportunity to score some points was a field goal that they did not get, which was just, again, 57 yards, right?
Let's clarify, because I didn't like how you said that. That was not the first opportunity to get points. Pittsburgh had the ball multiple times and didn't do anything with it. Very upsetting to see. That's the whole problem that we've had with this Steelers offense and the Steelers team in general, is the fact that we can't start a game strong. 3 points total in the first half, and you had technically 6 points total opportunity-wise. But again, if you have the ball, it's an opportunity to put points on the board. They got to start doing more with the ball at the beginning of the games, because you were down 10-0 at the end of the first. Just sad.
First half, right?
Yeah. No, 10-0 at the end of the first quarter. It was 13-3 at the end of the half. We just missed that. Boswell missed his second field goal attempt. He made the first one.
Gotcha. Yeah. So we saw the late first half drive opportunity there, which you saw some nice passing plays. They took advantage of the fact that the defense was in some prevent, hit Freiermuth over the middle a couple of times to move it down the field, and they hit a nice corner route to James Washington to get him into field goal range.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, didn't have enough time left on the clock to get closer, which they would have had they used a timeout earlier in the previous series, which you and I discussed with some fans we were hanging out with in the stands there, our frustration when it was getting to about a minute and they weren't calling the timeout.
Yep.
You know, we knew that they weren't going to be using it on the other end, and kind of thought, hey, if you're going to call a timeout here at all, you need to do it now and save yourself some clock. And Pittsburgh chose not to do it at that time.
And Mike Tomlin, in his press conference, even was asked about that, and he said he was more concerned with stopping the opposing team from scoring than making sure they had enough time to score. And that makes me annoyed, because to me that doesn't make sense as a coach at all.
Yeah.
You can still be focused on stopping the team from scoring whilst calling a timeout, like whilst controlling the clock. Was a little annoyed with that response on his part.
I wonder if that's something where he normally lets Keith Butler call the defense. And when he gets into crunch situations like that, he kind of takes over on the play calling. And then because of it, forgets to take timeouts like that, because he doesn't trust his coordinator to call the right plays, which it could have some merit to it if that is the situation.
Could have merit to that on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, throwing that out there. Yeah, the coordinators may not be.
That's fair, but you're still the head coach. You still got to watch the clock. It doesn't make sense to me why we didn't call timeouts sooner. We would have had, like, with those three plays that we ran, we would have more than enough time to get in field goal range. And luck, I mean, and even...
Yeah, maybe even try to get end zone.
Yeah, and that almost had an impact on the end of the game. It could have easily been a 9-point game, but instead it was only a 6-point game at the end of the game, and they could have won with a touchdown and an extra point. Luckily, that didn't happen, but... Spoiler alert, if you didn't watch the game and were waiting to listen to us talk about it. but that's, you know, that's how it was. I don't know what more to say about the first half. I'm tired of us just not playing football in the first half because that's literally what it was.
I think there's a big correlation, and I know we've been beating a dead horse on this, but I think there's a big correlation between not using the tight ends and not being able to open up the offense. We didn't see a single pass to the tight end until that last drive of the first half, in which they went to Freiermuth multiple times, moved the ball right down the field. Again, this was more of a prevent defense they were going against, so everybody was deep. But you've got to do that to open up the middle of the field. And these guys are chain movers, and not just Freiermuth, Gentry is too. So you got to try to get it to these guys and give them an opportunity to drag some people with them and go get first downs, because you're not really doing it creatively with the wide receivers.
Nope. And this,
you're doing a lot of short stuff, a lot of wide receiver screens, a lot of quick slants and drags that are only a couple yards past the line of scrimmage, and then hoping that they can go get it afterwards. Well, hoping isn't good enough. You need to throw it to them at or beyond the sticks, and they're just not doing it.
And then you,
but they're consistently not doing it. That's even worse.
Yeah, and here's another problem. You're doing this. You're throwing the ball to them, and then instead of them going down and going for the first down, they're turning around, running back outside, and running backwards over and over and over again. You got to, like, at some point, you have to start throwing the ball past the line to gain. At some point, you have to. Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. Here's the thing that's frustrating. Pittsburgh will either throw it behind the line to gain, or, you know, even behind the line of scrimmage on third and short or third and long, or they'll bomb it 40 yards down the field. You got to find the happy in between.
Yeah.
Send someone on a streak and have someone go a 10-yard out right there and hope that the corners get confused or the middle line or whoever. Whatever you got to do, figure it out. It's not that
send
hard.
Send somebody deep so that two guys go with them, and then you're going to have some holes in the zones. Like, you got to be a little more creative. When everything's short, it's way easier to cover. It's kind of like goal line offense. When you get too close to the end zone, it actually gets tougher to score the touchdown because you don't have as much room to work with.
Yep.
When you're just not willing to throw the ball down the field, it's the same thing. You're basically in a goal line defense. They don't have to cover anything more than 5 yards down the field because they're not throwing it there and they know it.
Yep. I literally took a class in high school that taught us how to scheme these open better than what Pittsburgh can do right now. And it's sad. But again, not to beat a dead horse, and I want to move on to player by player statistics here in a second. But it wasn't until the third quarter that we got a touchdown on the board. And again, it was on third and goal. And it was a big Ben Roethlisberger QB sneak. Like, I don't know. I'm happy that he did it. I'm happy he did. Ben hasn't been doing that for a long time. It was his first.
And he's taken a lot of criticism for that, too.
Yeah.
A ton of criticism for not running QB sneaks. And not only did he run it for a touchdown, he ran it after it failed previously.
Mm-hmm.
So he didn't just give up on it. He said, no, we can do this. And he ran it again, and then he ran it successfully. So, you know, I got to give him credit for that because it's very easy to look at what the interior offensive line has done this year and say, there's no way in hell I'm running a QB sneak behind these guys. They keep on getting their butts kicked and move backwards on every play.
Yeah.
But he stuck his nose out there and he got the touchdown, and a very crucial one, because we weren't getting a lot of points this game, man. It was all Boswell and Ben's legs.
Yeah.
That's the points today, you know?
For real. I mean, it was. But yeah, let's go ahead and real quick go on to player by player. Ben, obviously the only touchdown in the game was Ben's rushing touchdown. Ben, completion rating wasn't bad. 16 out of 25. Not horrible. But only 148 passing yards. Didn't even break 150. The benefit was no interceptions, but unfortunately also no touchdowns there as well.
Yeah. He did, however, get the milestone of becoming the number five passing yardage quarterback in all-time history. So
yep.
If you watched the game, if you did get the chance to attend the game like we did, you watched history. So
we watched
grateful of that.
We watched history twice that game, but we're not going to talk about it right now. We'll get there.
No, we'll talk about that. Yeah, we're going to talk about that.
Yeah.
James Harrison had something to say about that.
James Harrison did have something to say about that. and then also, I don't know. I don't have much more to say about Ben. Ben played well, I thought. I don't get me wrong. I don't think Ben played bad, poorly. No. It's well, just, he didn't have time. He had more time than normal, actually, shockingly. But the plays that they called weren't good plays, period.
Well, and I think the interior offensive line really kind of betrayed them a lot in this game. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of pressure coming from inside on the guards in the center. And it's very difficult to throw into a pass, and it's difficult to have enough time for those deeper passes to develop. Because if you're going to throw it 10 yards plus down the field, you can't just hit your back foot and then immediately throw the ball. You need to wait a second. You need to look off the safety. There's a lot that goes involved with that, getting through your reads and finding people that are open, and it requires having time. But if your interior offensive line's getting their butt kicked, they're just completely missing people. We'll get into the offensive linemen, but a couple of those guys I felt had a very below-average game. And that's not good enough. And that's why you struggled running the ball. If your guards in your center, which are the guys that are supposed to be the road graders, the guys that are moving the defensive line and the linebackers and creating big holes, if they're not even creating little holes, you got a major problem.
Yeah.
And that's where we're at with the offensive line right now, is absolutely zero push in the run game. And it shows. You know, I did feel like there was a little bit of an improvement when they used Chase Claypool running the ball. He got north and south faster instead of trying to push it all the way to the sideline, which is what he should do. Being that big and strong of a wide receiver, use your momentum and hit people. You'll get some yards.
Yeah.
So I liked seeing that evolution, basically, to using him in the reverse and the end-around game.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely seeing better play, at least there, out of him. Chase Claypool did have a couple drops this game that were just very bad. He got benched multiple times in this game.
He deserved it.
Yeah, and here's the weird statistic. Stat-wise, he has zero receptions for 12 yards. That's what they put on his stat line. I don't know how it makes sense or what could have happened for that, but they put down zero receptions for 12 yards on two targets.
Yeah, that doesn't compute, man.
No, it doesn't make sense in my brain either, but I'm happy that we're on the same page with it.
Yeah.
But the one drop was that screenplay that you were like, you know what? We throw that play a lot when it's not there, and this time it was there, and he just dropped the ball.
Yeah.
Put his hands upfield.
How many times do we get upset because they throw a screenplay and the DB is hitting them the second the ball gets there? That wasn't the case. It was well blocked. The timing of when the play was called was excellent versus whatever the defense had called. They weren't there. They weren't ready for it. There was room to run.
Yep.
And Chase just dropped it. Just straight dropped it. And it's unfortunate because he was saying all the right things coming up to the game. You know, he made a real nice statement, an official statement on his, I think it was on his Instagram page.
Yeah.
Talking about how, you know, he was really looking forward to being with the team. He loves being with the team. He's committed to doing better. And, you know, as far as making mental mistakes, I would say he did do better. You know, we didn't get any personal fouls from him. We didn't see any of that dumb stuff. But physically, he let himself down by dropping that ball.
Yep. Yep. Very unfortunate. Pat Freiermuth, 4 for 4 for 37 yards. Deontay Johnson, 5 for 5 for 38 yards. Great to see those guys hang onto the ball, catch them, make moves. Pat Freiermuth, unfortunately, did go out with an injury in this game and is being evaluated and going through the concussion protocol. But Pat Freiermuth, again, is proving his worth. I realize he dropped the one touchdown pass last week at the end of the game, but again, James did a great job of explaining it's not on Pat in that situation. Like, yeah, they say if your hand's on the ball, you're supposed to catch it. That defender played the ball perfectly to where almost nobody could have caught that.
And it's a 220-pound safety, so
yeah.
It's one thing if you're getting hit by a nickel back or something. That's not what it was. It's a big safety, made a great play on it, that's for sure. Freiermuth, I thought, very impressive. Throw him the ball, he catches it, he gets extra yards. Even on the play that he got concussed, man, like, he got hit in ear hold, straight up hitting the side of the helmet, and he was just standing there, and he never dropped the ball.
Nope. It was flagged. That was
a
benefit.
And then a second guy came in and hit him, and, you know, he's laying there for a while, and eventually at some point he threw a flag. You didn't actually see the
flag. I never saw who threw it. I never saw who threw it.
Yeah. I think somebody just kind of, like, dropped it on the ground casually as they were walking over because they're like, I don't know how none of you guys threw that, so I'm gonna. Like, this guy's out cold because he got hit helmet to helmet. So yeah, we kind of got to call it.
Yeah.
But yeah, hopefully Pat will be able to clear protocol and get back for the game against the Chiefs. That's going to be very important to have him present in that game.
Yeah. But speaking of our tight ends real quick, Zach Gentry as well, 1 for 1 for 17 yards, but it was a hard earned 17 yards. Oh, I know, but this is Zach Gentry's coming out year. Like, he is coming out showing that he can perform as a tight end, blocking and receiving. I think he's proving both way more than what we expected to get out of him this year.
Oh, I would say probably like 20-fold, right?
Yeah.
Let's be realistic. Like, we knew that the reason he wasn't playing was because he wasn't a good enough blocker.
Yep.
We knew that. And what does he do? He spends 2 years in the weight room, comes in at 280 pounds, where he's listed at like 260, 265, and it's all muscle. He ain't fat. He's bullying people
we've
around.
We've seen him in person. Blocking. He's
not fat. No. He's bullying people around blocking. He's doing a great job in pass protection when they ask him to do so. And now when you throw him the ball, he is running people over like Jerome Bettis. Like, yep. I absolutely love that when he gets the ball, it's like he's looking for targets, man. He's a bowling ball looking for bowling pins all over, and he wants to see how many he can knock down before they finally gang up on him and get him to the ground.
It's funny because I think he's realized, too, and it's funny that I can think of multiple players that I've watched realize this, like from back in like my high school days when I watched teammates and stuff figure this out. When you hit somebody first or hit them back, it is easier to stay on your feet than if you just let them hit you.
Like, yeah, sure is.
Oh, I don't even know how to explain that. But like, the bowling ball thing that they talk about is mostly because when you put force into somebody, and if it is received equally, you'll stay up.
Yeah.
Or if you put more into it, you're going to knock them over, maybe knock yourself over the process, but you're probably still going to go forward, you know?
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right. He's getting this realization of, I'm not an ex-quarterback anymore, and I'm not a regular tight end either. I'm a big tight end.
6'8".
When he uses that size, that momentum, and that now newly acquired within the last couple years strength, this additional strength, my Lord, like, he is going to move people. I just personally want to see them start using him in the red zone. Like, when you get in close to the goal line, start throwing some fades to the 6'8" tight end. That's the guy that should be getting the fade opportunities in the corner of the end zone. Or just throw it in the back of the end zone. Tell him to run straight and just throw it to the back of the end zone and throw it nice and high. Either he's going to catch it or it's going to be incomplete.
Yeah.
Because the DBs aren't going to be able to get up there as high as he can being that tall.
Yeah.
So I like it, man. I'm optimistic about the future of Zach Gentry. One of our fans that we were cheering with during the game right before this play, we mentioned, hey, Zach Gentry's in there. Guy turned around. It was a really good. Now, I don't know what his name was. He was wearing a white Ben Roethlisberger jersey. Had a lot of fun cheering with this guy. Real nice guy. And he was joking around when he said it. He's like, Gentry sucks. And then they throw out this Gentry on the plate. He makes a big play. He turns around. He's like, I'm wrong. Gentry's good.
It was a fun time. We met a lot of fun people at this game. I also want to give a shout out to, oh my gosh, now I forgot his freaking name. Was it Sean or Shane? It was Shane.
I think it was Shane. Yeah.
Shane, his friend was Sean. But yeah, he was a good guy. He came over. If you guys haven't been to the game and you ever go, make sure to tailgate in Red Lot 6, right? Red Lot 6?
Yeah.
It's a great time. If you drive in and you can get anywhere near the back left corner, it is tailgate city. They do shots every half hour on the half hour. You hear the bell. You come over. They say, ready. Here we go, Steelers. Here we go. And shots. Like, it's a great time. The one guy brought us freaking smoked turkey or however he cooked that. I don't even know. The most tender turkey melting in your mouth that I like. It's just a great time to hang out with these guys.
Are professional
tailgaters.
Been doing it like 30 plus years. Most of these guys, they're sharing steak with us. They're just really fun guys to talk to, really down to earth, really nice guys. A lot of guys that are probably close to the retirement age, and just tremendous human beings. They were a lot of fun to be around.
We tried to share our hot cheese filled hot dogs with them. They had other stuff. They weren't worried about it.
Freaking chocolate cake. And steak.
Deviled and eggs. Their own
custom bars. They're making Bloody Marys. Yeah. And just an incredible time, man. Incredible time.
Expect
for sure.
And get excited. We did invite one of the guys on to interview with us about tailgating stuff during the off season. So we look forward to reaching out to him and getting in contact with him and maybe sitting down for an interview and talking about the history of, I'm pretty sure he's the third generation in his family to have season tickets, which is just crazy, but very awesome. And each game I've been at, I've been to three games this year, Denver, Seattle, and oh no.
Tennessee Titans.
Yesterday's game, Tennessee. And I've been by them twice. I've been with that group twice specifically. And they welcome you in. The last time I didn't have any liquor to share with them. So this time I made sure James and I each brought our own bottle of Crown Royal and gave that to them as like a thank you for, you know, allowing us to come into this tradition that they have. It's just cool. It's just really cool. The people you meet and how chilled and down to earth they are. And you're just a Steeler fan. You're just a Steeler fan hanging out with a Steeler fan. With an occasional Titans fan or Cowboys fan coming in, but whatever.
Yeah, they were all cool too, you know?
Yeah. But let's go back to the game. Sorry, I got on a little tangent there.
No, you're good, man. No, we didn't talk wide receivers really that much. We touched on Chase Claypool not having a great game. Past that, I really don't think anybody stuck out that much. I know you said Deontay had the most catches. Past that, we had Ray Ray with one catch, James Washington with three. They used him a little bit. The corner route was a really nice thrown ball.
It was a great thrown ball.
Got them into scoring position. So, again, like we've talked about it, we think James Washington can have a lot of potential within this offense. But you got to use him correctly. I think you can use him to stretch the middle of the field kind of like you do with tight ends because of how strong he is. And how good he is at the contested catch situations.
That doesn't mean throw to him when he's quadruple covered in the end zone, Ben.
That's 100% true.
Because that happened.
Never a good idea. Yeah, that did happen. Absolutely, that happened. It did not end well. At least it wasn't a pick.
Correct.
You know, so there's that. But yeah, we didn't see those like fade opportunities, the Claypool, the Freiermuth, the Gentry, any of the tall guys.
Well, we saw the opportunities, and they just never did that. There were multiple times where we said, hey, look, Gentry's on the outside, like inside the 10-yard line, or Claypool was inside or outside one-on-one within, you know, 15 yards or whatever. Those are the opportunities you have. You got to go for them. If you're going to chuck it up one-on-one to Claypool when he's down the field.
Yeah, you better do it in the red zone, too.
That's how I feel.
I'm with you. Let's talk about this offensive line. I felt like, once again, the tackles had better game than the interior guys did. Core four, I would say, probably the best looking of all of them again. I do think Dan Moore is developing a little bit as the season's going along. I'm not seeing as many times where I see him get beat play after play after play. I think it's just happening a few times throughout the course of a game now, so maybe there is some development going on with him.
Yeah.
The interior struggled mightily. They didn't get any push at all in this game. Trey Turner over and over got beat. It was ugly.
Yeah, that was the Bud Dupree sack.
Yeah.
It was a play action, I think, and he was supposed to pull and block the outside linebacker, and he just whiffed.
Yeah, he was just with him. Yeah, it's as much as I felt like Trey Turner was playing pretty well at the beginning of the year, it seems like it's just completely falling apart for him the last couple of games. It's not getting any better for Kendrick Green either. And then John LeGlue is just being asked to do something that is not something he's got a lot of experience doing. I think of the three, he probably had the best game, which is saying something. But again, you're talking about a 6'7", 310-pound offensive tackle trying to play guard.
Yep.
He's giving great effort. He's doing everything he can. He's built to play tackle. So we're trying. He's trying, but hopefully we'll see something. Maybe Dotson can come back this week. It would be fantastic if we could get Kevin Dotson back. I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens Wednesday, because if anyone's coming back from the IR, that's when we're going to hear about it.
Yep.
And Kevin Dotson is the one that I'm kind of targeting. If we get him back, honestly, I think the entire offense can change. I think you'll start getting the push in the running game. You'll start seeing some holes open, and you'll see more time for the quarterback because people won't be running right up that side anymore.
Yeah.
And Kendrick Green and Trey Turner just got to worry about each other. They don't have to worry about anything to the left because Dotson will hold that down. You can blitz two guys at him. He'll probably handle them both. He's that good. But it just takes one more question mark out. So I'm really hoping that high ankle sprain is healing up for Dotson and he'll be able to come back.
Absolutely. Moving on to the defensive side of the ball. I don't know. Where do you want to start?
You tell me where you want to start. You don't have to start with a position group. We can just start with people that we thought had great games and then go through it.
I mean, let's start with the three forced fumbles. Arthur Mollett, yeah. Cam Sutton, and Derek Tuzka.
Let's go, Derek.
Three forced fumbles and all
his first
were recovered.
Professional sack.
His first professional sack. Yeah. But all were recovered. We forced tremendous. Three turnovers on fumbles, and we also had the pick, but we'll get to that. Minkah Fitzpatrick recovered one of the fumbles. TJ Watt recovered another one, and Joe Hayden recovered the third. And I don't know if it was necessarily in that order. But that's how you win games, people. Let me clarify. The offense should do more with the ball once we get it for them on defense. But that's how you win games. You force turnovers. You force mistakes, and you take advantage. At least we got a couple field goals out of those.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. The defense did their job on keeping the game close and keeping the offense in the game by creating tons of turnovers in the game. They got to the quarterback and sacked him four times, which we were calling for that. We said we need some pressure on Tannehill. It happened, and when it happened, mistakes started happening.
Yep.
So fantastic to see from that. I think, honestly, I want to talk about Minkah Fitzpatrick first.
Let's do it.
Minkah had a tremendous game. Very nearly had an interception at one point where he dove for a ball that was slightly overthrown to a receiver, but had 14 tackles in this game. 14. Like, are you kidding me? How many times this season are we going to see our safeties lead the team in tackles? And just an incredible game from Minkah. I got to be honest, man. Like, I don't know how many times, if he had not made the tackle, the guy's running for another 20, 30 yards easily.
Yep.
And here comes Minkah to go make another stick and hit somebody. Just,
yeah, Minkah making hits where the middle linebacker should be.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. But I feel like now he's starting to, it's clicking to where he's like, I know these guys aren't going to get off their blocks, so I'm just going to start getting to the ball faster. And that's going to make us a little more susceptible to play action fakes, unfortunately. But his quick reaction time and how fast he's getting to the ball is just absolutely tremendous. He's doing an amazing job right now. And just, he's all over the place. He's all over the place. And he really deserves any of the positive light that he's getting right now. And his running mate, Terrell Edmonds, Terrell had a nice game too, making a lot of tackles, getting there at the line of scrimmage. In stopping people for short gains, not letting them get any momentum going too. So really the safety duo, when you have 24 tackles out of your safeties, like, they're making it happen and they're keeping things from busting off into really long plays, which is what your safeties are supposed to do. They're doing it at a high level. At least they did in this game. Yeah. So tremendous effort, I felt, by those two safeties this game.
Yeah, Terrell Edmonds was able to put up two tackles for loss. Like, that's not even at the line of scrimmage. That's insane for him.
Yeah, that's very good. For a safety to be getting tackles for loss, that's very, very good.
Love to see that. And James was wearing his Troy Polamalu jersey for this game. It was quite fitting. We just needed some hair blown in the wind or something. I don't know.
Yeah, it's got to be them, man. It ain't me. That's for sure.
That is for sure. let's talk about the corners. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, let's go corner first. We got corners.
Yeah, so I'm gonna go in the slot first. Arthur Mallette came in and I think played one of his best games of the year all around. I mean, Arthur Mallette. Man. Huh?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, I'm with
five,
you.
Five total tackles on the game. He had the obvious forced fumble. Unfortunately, they didn't credit him with any past breakups or anything like that, but he played phenomenal.
You wouldn't have known any better. You would have thought he was Mike Hilton out there with all the hits, how fast he was flying to the ball.
Yep.
Oh, very good on his tackling on this game. Thought it was a very nice game out of Arthur Mallette. Maybe his best on the season. And again, we're not expecting Arthur Mallette to get five interceptions in a game.
No.
But in Pittsburgh's defense, the nickel corner almost has to play like a linebacker. And in this game, he absolutely played like a linebacker. Tremendous effort, I felt like, from him. And, you know, if you're watching the YouTube video, you probably just saw me as Cody was starting to talk about Arthur Mallette, giving my best Joe Hayden impression here, because Joe Hayden lifts weights, baby. And we love that about Joe. He always loves to joke around about, I lift weights. And you know what? You definitely notice it when the game's on the line and the man hits somebody a lot bigger than him and drives them backwards and keeps them short of the first down marker on fourth down, game on the line.
Yeah.
Tremendous. Yeah. Absolutely tremendous. And Joe was on a pitch count. They didn't play him the full game, so he got a little bit of time here and there throughout the game. But when it came down to a singular play and we needed someone to make a stop, Joe Hayden stepped up. And he made the stop, and I got to be honest, he looks bigger than before. I feel like he was just hitting biceps the whole time he was on the injured list.
Well, I would have been. Why the heck not?
He's not going to get any faster at this point,
but he can get stronger.
Yeah. Yeah, he ain't going to get faster. You're absolutely right. But you know what? Some corners throughout their career, when they start to notice that they're slowing down, they make the transition, they play safety, and they play a few more years. And it makes me wonder if maybe, just maybe, Joe can make that transition. He really is pretty physical. He's a good tackler. He's not the biggest guy in the world, but he does love to lift weights. He loves to brag about that. And if he could pack on a little bit more muscle, maybe he could play some safety back there. And then you don't have to worry about whether or not you bring back Terrell Edmonds. You just slide Joe Hayden over there, strong safety.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing it. I wouldn't mind seeing it at all. Other guys, I obviously mentioned Cam Sutton briefly with the forced fumble. I almost thought that one was TJ. Oh, yeah, no, that was a different one, was it? I don't even remember which one that was.
There's a lot of them. It's a good problem to not be able to keep track of it.
But Cam Sutton played his butt off all game long. I don't think he was ever... I didn't see him getting burned. I saw Joe Hayden got burned once, and then the player luckily dropped the ball. But Cam Sutton played a good game, at least a good enough game that we didn't notice him in a bad way.
Yeah, it was a nice bounce back game, right? No, we don't need him to get 10 interceptions in a game. We just ask that you don't get burned a bunch. And that's exactly what he did. He was a solid contributor. I felt the same way about Akilah Witherspoon.
Yep.
When Joe Hayden wasn't starting out there, it was Witherspoon. Witherspoon did a nice job. He's playing more physical than he did previously in other teams. And really not sticking out in a negative manner in coverage.
Yep.
So not going to see him get too many two interception games. Let's be realistic about this. But he's got to look the part. And as long as he continues looking at the part like this, I think Pittsburgh will attempt to retain him for next year and maybe some future years as well.
Yeah. I don't know. You want to move to linebackers?
Yeah, let's talk middle linebackers, man.
Well, Devin Bush had himself a better game, I would say.
I would say tremendous in coverage.
Yep.
Still needs to work on his run stopping abilities a little bit there.
It's pursuit. It's a lot of it's pursuit. You got to have better angles.
And I think a lot of it too is schematically with the defensive line. If you're in the nickel a lot, the way the Steelers' outside linebackers line up, they're so far outside that they don't get to help with stopping any of those offensive linemen from getting to the second level. So usually you got two or three offensive linemen now going to the second level, and that leaves your middle linebackers, who ours are like 230, 235 pounds, yep, trying to go one-on-one against 320, 330, and a larger pound offensive lineman. It is just, it's a losing proposition. So we got to try to condense these guys in a little bit more to make it more difficult for them to get to our linebackers. And that's, I think, what the biggest issue is, because they're, neither one of them has the density or the length to discard these offensive linemen. They just don't. So unless you're blitzing them and getting around those offensive linemen, they're not going through them.
Unfortunately not. Devin Bush did miss a interception opportunity. Two
pass breakups on the game.
They only credit him with one.
Well, that's not right. So
I'm just letting you know. But the one that
was there, Cody,
the one that I'm sure they credit him with, that's, I'm sure the one they counted was it should have been an interception. Yeah. Hands down, yeah, in the red zone, should have been an interception, and it wasn't. Again, better game out of him. The next transition step, the next part of this is get to the point where you're making those plays.
Yep.
Almost only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades, my friend, and doesn't count in interceptions on a football.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know what? I am happy, though, because in the last 3 or 4 weeks, he's starting to get a lot of pass breakups. He's looking pretty good in coverage. So that's at least something you can hang your hat on. And you know what? For the first time of the season, you could say that about Joe Schobert, too, right?
Yep, for his first interception with the Steelers.
Yep, but absolutely beautiful play by Taco Charlton. Gets his hands up when he can't get to the quarterback. Bats the ball up in the air, gives the opportunity to his teammates. Joe Schobert takes advantage of it, easily gets tracked down, but I'm not too mad about that
because he's got a little slow.
he looked like a defensive lineman, but that's okay. He got the pick. He had the hands of an angel when he caught it.
Yep, the one guy two rows in front of us was like, that was a great play by Taco. I was like, it's Taco Tuesday on Sunday. And he got a good chuckle out of that. It was a good time. But yeah, again, Joe Schobert, great job intercepting the ball. We did see a good portion during the game of Robert Spillane as well. Unfortunately, nothing splashy out of him. Was just kind of an average game. There was one play where we saw Marcus Allen come in and make a nice tackle to prevent a first down. He came in.
And he was playing your dime backer role pretty much in this game. So something that you would think he'd be pretty comfortable doing.
Yeah. Moving on to the outside linebackers, since we're already talking about Taco Charlton. He obviously had the pass breakup that led to a interception. And then you also had TJ Watt with 5 total tackles, the 1.5 sacks, which then broke the record for most sacks in a single season by a defensive, for Steelers specifically. We waved our terrible towels. We celebrated him. We had a moment. And then what did James Harrison have to say?
James Harrison congratulated him on breaking his record. He said, but don't stop there, brother. 22.5 is the NFL record. Go get that thing. Oh, so pretty awesome to see James Harrison in such a supportive role, really trying to embrace and really get himself back in good favor with Steeler Nation, which, you know what, you know, we got to look at all the good that James Harrison did for us and not focus on the Cincinnati Bengals and the New England Patriots of his career, you know. Yep. There was a lot of great years with Pittsburgh, and we should embrace that. And it's fantastic to see him automatically embracing the guy that basically took his job and ended his career in Pittsburgh and saying, hell yeah, man, go do your thing.
Yes, sir.
So pretty awesome. Pretty awesome in my book.
On the other side of the ball, Alex Highsmith. Derek Tuska, technically. You're not wrong. I mean, he was on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, he was.
As far as writing.
He was on all sides.
He was. Tuska had his first sack.
Woo-hoo.
We celebrated that. We got excited. But Tuska played a good game overall. I mean,
yeah.
I was proud of him being able to come in and apply still apply pressure. We've talked about that all the time. You have to get someone other than TJ Watt and Cam Hayward to provide pressure. And we got that today, or yesterday, excuse me, out of other people on the defensive line, too. We'll get to that in a little bit. But Tuzka getting that sack really was important for the defense, or excuse me, the offense, knowing, hey, just because this guy's on the field doesn't mean you can take a play off.
Yeah.
That's great. We need that for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. You need them to be a little bit, I don't want to say fearful, but at least they got to respect the fact that these guys can get after the quarterback too. And it does definitely get a little more clout for both him and Taco, both being parts of forcing a turnover in this game.
Yeah.
Hopefully we get to see a little bit more out of Alex Highsmith. I'm sure he isn't 100% yet coming back off of the injury. So hopefully he's a little bit healthier going into the next game. Because I really do want to see him finish strong. I want to see him show to us that he is the real deal. He is the answer out there at that outside linebacker position. Because Pittsburgh fans are used to getting more than three sacks out of a starting outside linebacker on a season.
Yeah,
he's got absolutely 3 games left to improve on that. I think, honestly, if he gets to 5.5 or 6 sacks, you can still say it's a pretty decent campaign. I was hoping for 7 out of them this year. You had your mark closer to 10, hoping he'd get up to there. It's looking right now that we should be pretty happy if he gets to 5, but I really still want to see him get to 6. You know, I want to see that go on a tear, get a couple in a game, or get one per game the rest of the way to get some momentum going into next year.
It could happen. It could happen.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look at what we got with Chris Wormley right now. Let's transition defensive lineman. Chris Wormley, first defensive play of the entire game, smokes the left guard, goes straight in and gets a sack before they even know what's going on. Beautiful.
Absolutely. Swam right under him.
What's he got, 6.5 on a year now? I mean, come on. This dude, I don't think, ever had a season where he had more than 3 or 4.
No, he did. I believe you're correct. And actually looking at his career stats, obviously he's played with Baltimore and Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
The most sacks he's had in a year was 6. And it was this year with us. Other than that, 1.5.
1.5. Come on. Really?
We love it.
Like, there it is. I mean, And at the beginning of the year, I was very critical of Chris Wormley, and I don't think that he's the kind of guy that typically is going to beat with swim moves and arm over moves and whatever. A lot of his sacks this year have been just from collapsing the pocket on the interior. But I feel really good about him being our top backup defensive end, man. I really do. If Tuitt is able to come back next year 100% healthy and with his mind right and everything, having Chris Wormley and Isaiah Loudermilk being the next two guys off the bench makes me feel pretty good, man, because Loudermilk's starting to really look the part too. I never felt like he was really out of place this year, but I do feel like Isaiah's making more and more strides week after week, showing some good stack and shed capability of getting off the blockers and getting to the running backs and getting them to the ground, which you absolutely love to see. And seeing a lot of other stuff going on there too, positive from him. So I personally am very optimistic about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And then also, you obviously talked about Bugs.
Thank you, babe.
I think Isaiah Loudermilk, I want to transition back to him.
Yeah, let's talk about him.
Isaiah Loudermilk, I think, came in. He only had 4 tackles, nothing crazy.
That's a lot from a backup defensive lineman.
That's a lot for a backup defensive lineman, but I also didn't see him getting blown up over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Or pushed back into, you know, the where the middle linebackers were and all this stuff. I didn't see that this game.
Mm-hmm.
And I was excited to see that for sure. No one else I really want to talk about on the defensive line unless you want to talk about Cam Hayward.
You know, Cam had a tremendous game once again, got another half sack, so he's climbing up the leaderboards again. And I did feel like it's worth mentioning we saw a decent amount of Carlos Davis for the first time since week one.
Correct.
And he flowed down the line of scrimmage well. You didn't see him collapsing the line, but you did see him flowing to the ball carrier well. Guy's got great mobility for a 300-pounder. So nice to see another fully healthy body out there. Hopefully we can get some of his teammates back. Maybe if Montrevious Adams comes back this week, we can start to see some of the best options that we've got at defensive line, minus obviously Alualu and Tuitt.
Yeah, absolutely. Moving on to special teams now.
Yeah.
Freaking Boz for president. I don't care that care that he missed the one at the end of the half. That was I put that blame. Don't get me wrong, you gotta try and make that kick, and he got close, especially in the cold wind or the cold air. But if Tomlin handles that situation better, that field goal is made because you're a lot closer. They would have gotten a lot closer.
You'll get closer. And to give a reference point, this was a 57-yard attempted kick, and it was about 30 degrees out, which the ball doesn't travel anywhere near as far when it's colder like that. You know, his kickoffs weren't going to the back of the end zone like normal. They were getting just barely into the end zone. So you know it's an extra like 5-10 yard difference on those kicks.
Yeah.
When that's about the end of his range, right around 57, 58.
And it was close. Don't get me wrong. It was close.
It was perfect left to right. He was perfect dead right down the middle.
Yep.
Just didn't get enough on it, which I don't think there's a lot more he could have done on that.
No, because to put it in perspective, they had a defensive player back there ready to receive it. He kicked it far enough that he couldn't receive it. Just not enough to get it over the freaking crossbar.
Yeah, which shows you he was pretty dang close.
Yeah. So, Boswell, 4 for 5 on field goals, 1 for 1 on extra points. 48 was his long on the game, and I believe that was towards the closed end, not the open end, which also made a little bit of a difference. Presley Harvin.
Very up and down game again. Seems like that's going on a lot with him this year. I did see a fan post in one of the fan pages today that he found out within the last week or two that his father's terminally ill. So you got to feel bad for the guy and what he's probably going through mentally. It's going to be real tough to focus on it. You got to at least well wishes to him. Pray for the guy if you're a praying kind of person, because when you're terminal, there's no coming back from it. It's just... hopefully it can be as graceful and painless as possible.
Yeah.
And then maybe in the backside of it after things have passed, he might be able to kind of refocus and get back to the full potential is what he is, because he has a tremendously strong leg. Yeah. And when he's dialed in, he's extremely accurate too. So I'm not ready to give up on him. I do want to see him come back next year. Some people are saying move on from him. I'm not in that camp at all.
No,
I think you got a guy with a ton of potential, and stick to him. Stick to him, just like we stuck with Boz when he had a bad year. Let's stick with Presley and see what he can do, because the potential is enormous.
Yeah. Ray-Ray McLeod, just to end it off, Ray-Ray, 2 returns on kicks for 19, for 19 average, 20 was his long, nothing crazy. And then 3 punt returns, 13 average, 17 being his long.
The 17-yarder was pretty nice, man.
It was nice. It was a lot of running for only 17 yards.
I thought he was going to break it, to be real with you.
It would have been nice. It would have been nice. Also, a small shout-out. I don't remember names, but the lovely Titans fans that sat next near us, one Titan fan was up above us, and then the girl sat next to us. She dealt with a lot the whole time. We were a little rambunctious. And she handled it quite well. She had a Boston Celtics hat on. It was really confusing. I was like, wait, what's happening? But she was a good sport there. The guy was a good sport as well. They handled the loss with grace, and we weren't jerks about it either, to be fair. But it was a good time. Overall, it was a great game. I don't have anything else to say necessarily about player specific, unless you have someone you want to talk about.
No, I feel like that covers everybody that we need to cover. Hopefully we have good luck for you. Some good news at the end of the week as far as the injuries with Chris Wormley experiencing that groin injury. He was unable to return to the game. Freiermuth, as we said, with a concussion. He's in protocol, so he needs to clear that to be able to play against the Chiefs. But we're coming back to you on Friday this week, folks. We're going to give you an update on what's going on as far as the injuries, who's been practicing throughout the week. Give you some insight as to what's going well for the Chiefs and how we can stop them. Give you our keys to success and tell you a little bit about what's going on here.
Absolutely. So again, thank you guys so much for listening. Be sure to like and follow on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube at Steelers by the Lake. Give us those 5-star reviews for James. And until next time, this is your host, James and Cody, signing off.
Peace.